What Quince really wanted was 3 warm days on a love boat with Ricky. He might never come back. Baker's had 18,000 people, so the central post office on Main was usually busy, and there was always a different clerk behind the counter. That's how he'd rented the box. He'd waited until a new postal worker was on duty. CMT Investments was the official lessee. He went straight to the box, around a corner to a wall with 100 others. There were 3 letters, and as he snatched them and stuffed them in his coat pocket, his heart froze as he saw that one was from Ricky. He hurried on to Main and minutes later entered his bank at exactly 10 a.m. His father had been there for 4 hours, but they had long since stopped bickering over Quince's work schedule. As always, he stopped at his secretary's desk to hurriedly remove his gloves as if important matters were waiting. She handed him his mail, his 2 phone messages, and reminded him that he had lunch in 2 hours with a local real estate agent. He locked his door behind him, flung his gloves one way and his coat the other, and ripped open the letter from Ricky. He sat on his sofa and put on his reading glasses, breathing heavily, not from the walk, but from anticipation. He was on the verge of arousal when he started reading. The words hit like bullets. After the second paragraph, he emitted a strange, painful, "Oh," then a couple of, "Oh my God," then a low hissing, "Son of a bitch." "Quiet," he told himself. "The secretary is always listening." The first reading brought shock, the second disbelief. Reality began settling in with the third reading, and Quince's lips started to quiver. "Don't cry, damn it," he told himself. He threw the letter on the floor and paced around his desk, ignoring as best he could the cheerful faces of his wife and children. 20 years' worth of class photos and family portraits were lined along his credenza, just under the window. He looked out and watched the snow, now heavier and accumulating on the sidewalks. God, how he hated Baker's, Iowa! He thought he might leave and escape to the beach, where he could frolic with a handsome young pal and maybe never come home. Now, he would leave under different circumstances. It was a joke, a hoax, he told himself, but he instantly knew better. The scam was too tight, the punchline too perfect. He'd been set up by a professional. All his life, he'd fought his desires. Somehow, he'd finally found the nerve to crack the closet door, and now he got shot between the eyes by a con man. Stupid, stupid, stupid! How could this be so difficult? Random thoughts hit from every direction as he watched the snow. Suicide was the easy answer, but his doctor was gone and he really didn't want to die, at least not at the moment. He wasn't sure where he'd find $100,000 he could send off without raising suspicions. The old bastard next door paid him a pittance and kept his thumb on every dime. His wife insisted on balancing their checkbook. There was some money in mutuals, but he couldn't move it without her knowing. The life of a rich banker in Baker's, Iowa, meant a title and a Mercedes and a large mortgaged house and a wife with social activities. Oh, how he wanted to escape. He'd go to Florida anyway and track the letter somehow and confront this con man, expose his extortion attempt, find some justice. He, Quince Garb, had done nothing wrong. Surely a crime was being perpetrated here. Perhaps he could hire an investigator and maybe a lawyer, and they'd protect him. They'd get to the bottom of this scam. Even if he found the money and wired it as instructed, the gate would be opened, and Ricky, whoever in hell Ricky was, might want more. What would stop Ricky from extorting again and again? If he had guts, he'd run off anyway, run to Key West or some hot spot where it never snowed, and live any damn way he wanted to live, and let the pitiful little people of Baker's, Iowa, gossip about him for the next half century. But he didn't have the guts, and that's what made Quince so sad. His children were staring at him, freckled smiles with teeth wrapped in silver braces. His heart sank, and he knew he'd find the money and wire it precisely as directed. He had to protect them. They had done nothing wrong. The bank's stock was worth about $10 million, all of it still tightly controlled by the old man who at the moment was barking in the hallway. The old man was 81, very much alive, but still 81.